I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name's Matthew Appleby and I'm the editor of Horticulture Week. This is a sponsored podcast for the Spirit of Four Oaks virtual show, hosted this year at Horticulture Week. You can find it at horticultureweek.co.uk. Fargrow, which is industry leader in supply of professional products for professional growers, landscapers and garden centres, is a platinum exhibitor at the event. Richard Hopkins is managing director and is also West Sussex Growers Association chairman. He's been active in campaigns to reopen garden centres during the coronavirus crisis, amongst other topical policy issues.
Hi, Richard. Good to speak to you.
Hi there, Matt.
A few months ago, things were looking a bit dark in the sector, but you have been one of the people at the forefront of campaigning, and that's been a huge success. So can you tell me about how it came about that you got so involved in the campaigning around the coronavirus crisis?
Yeah, sure. As everyone in horticulture, the shock of the lockdown was very immediate, particularly with garden centres closing. And very quickly after that, all the big DIY sheds closed as well. So all the ornamental growers immediately lost their routes to market. And although the supermarkets did pick up a chunk of that as the lockdown progressed, it was a dramatic loss of business. And April was looking pretty bleak. We were also affected because of the edibles market as well, the food services sector closing. So things were very difficult. But it became just very apparent to me early on that one of the apart from the commercial risks to Fargrow and all our customers, there was a mental health crisis brewing, which has regrettably turned out to be very much the case, as we're seeing from the statistics now. And I felt we had to do something to campaign that garden centres as large, airy, open spaces could very easily be made COVID safe, actually give somewhere for people to go and spend time in their gardens and sort of healthy activities. So that was really the background driver behind it, sort of the message we wanted to get across. So with the West Sussex Growers Association and individual members there, we started sort of campaigning and petitioning in all our local MPs, and the HTA sort of got on board pretty quickly and did a sterling job. They got a proper PR agency, and the publicity was incredibly high. In all the press and all the news channels, all the sort of TV magazine programs, it was really tremendous work from their part. And I'm very pleased that we're able to contribute to that. I'd also want to make a special note of thanks to, as it happens, he's our local MP, Andrew Griffith. But he, above all MPs, really got involved in this because obviously it's a key industry in in the region where Fargo are. They really got behind the message of getting gardens and got that message across into Whitehall.
No, well, Andrew came top of our list of the most active politicians involved in the crisis, and you were near the top of our list of most active industry people. But how big do you think the threat was to the growers within the West Sussex Growers Association and beyond, and how much have they recovered, do you think?
The threat that was apparent was existential. I mean, it could have wiped out massive chunks of the industry because unlike a really bad spring, a terrible weather event, you have a reasonable level of confidence of when that will be over and what life will be like afterwards. So some of them were caught with big losses because they specialize, of course, in spring planting, and you can't hang on to plants forever. And some of them were forced to make that decision very early. I think the recovery has been pretty good from what I'm hearing. We sense a lot of optimism in the industry. A few will have had possibly their best trading year ever. Others will have had an okay year or even a not very good year, like a bad weather event. But the optimism did come from the feeling that garden centres would open at some point in May, even though there was absolutely no indication from the government until a week before, I think it was, Matt, something like that. You sort of picked up on some stuff quite early on that there were some dates suggested, maybe the 11th, 13th of May, and what was going to go on. But from the end of April, the third week of April, in our business, we really saw growers stepping up. And, we could see they're planting, potting up, that kind of thing, because of what they were buying from us. They'd made that decision. They were going for broke at that stage. And you have to commit on their resilience and fortitude, because that was a gamble. Fortunately, it paid off.
No, indeed. And there have been some advantages that's come out of this. Some of the businesses involved have diversified their paths to market, and obviously there's a lot of new gardeners around. I mean, you have done more online, and that's happened across the industry, and that has attracted new gardeners in. What do you think this will mean in 2021? Do you think that will continue?
I hope so, yes. I think it will continue. Obviously, lots of businesses are, trying to plan for next year and what's going to happen. I think the new gardeners who have come into, to enjoy their garden. What was the stat? I think the HGA came up with is something like 3 million new gardeners. But hopefully, it'll give the growers enough of a boost next year to bring them back up, because a lot of them will be carrying more debt. They were able to take out the CBIL scheme loans. And, so it changes the profile of a business when you're suddenly carrying debt that you've got to pay off over the next 5 or 6 years. And I know there was a long campaign to get that to be paid off over 10 years for horticulture. But the upswing from online sales, from the new entries into horticulture, are all good news. We can't see it as anything other than positive. And we have to gear up production in this country so it doesn't just suck in imports from the Netherlands.
That's the big debate at the moment about Brexit and imports. That's where things are moving on to. Obviously, there's a bit of a contradiction between UK growers and suppliers wanting imports, but at the same time wanting more home production. So where do you think that's going? What are you hearing from government and from the trade bodies?
We're hearing, obviously, it's been announced that there's going to be no UK side inspections until the end of July at the earliest, which is obviously very good news for highly perishable crops like young plants coming in. But of course, there will be phytosanitary checks, which are possibly stronger than they have been previously. So I know there's a fair amount of nervousness about that. So it depends on how well that ends up being executed. At the moment, everyone's just working on the assumption that they will be able to get plants. It's unknown what the impact on some of the plants that come from hotter countries, because a lot of very young plants come out of there initially. I've not heard anyone ringing alarm bells, so I think most growers will find that their supply chain is okay.
No, that's good news. Now, September is traditionally show season, but not this year. But you are closely involved in Spirit of Four Oaks and other shows too. But it is tricky promoting new products this year. So how are you going about that?
It's a challenge, isn't it? So we're doing a lot more of the virtual stuff and with the Spirit of Four Oaks. We've actually just 2 days ago, I think we released our new video, which is a video of our showroom. We've always had the showroom, and you know, its purpose is that growers can bring their retailers to our showroom. They can have it to themselves. They can spend time decide exactly what decorative pots, planters, baskets they're going to grow in for the following season. The point of the video is to make more people aware that that facility is available. And we want to encourage as many people to come to that as possible, because the challenge is that there's only so much you can do virtually. You know, people do want to touch and feel these things and see what they're like. It would be interesting next year when I hope the trade shows will actually happen, you know, in real life, that our marketing costs will go up, because we'll have to support a physical show and a virtual version of it as well at the same time.
Wow. Okay. Noel, that's to be seen. See what happens next year on that one. One other issue that's come up recently is the AHDB, the levy board, and there's some people balloting basically against the levy board, wanting to get rid of it in horticulture. What's your view on that?
We speak within the West Sussex Growers about what the expectations are from the AHDB, and we sort of put out a note which you were sort of kind enough to put in Hort Week last week, because obviously there is now an announcement. I think all the right noises are coming out of AHDB. Our position is that we know there is a requirement for a reliably funded body, and they must be there with a remit to sponsor and lead effective research programs. We need someone who's going to take responsibility and the lead on knowledge transfer. And it's all got to be done for fair value. It's got to be cost effective. I can understand some of the complaints against AHDB, because the raw figures, their income is not going up, but appears their overheads are going up. So there's lots of things to point at and complain, but I think it would be very unfortunate if we threw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, there are improvements to be made, and I think there is, although there was the DEFRA review, which was 2 years ago now, took ages to come through. I don't know what the delays were. I don't think it was very well executed, but all the noises that are coming out now suggest they do want to continue that dialogue, and they do want to make changes. And perhaps importantly for AHDB, is they actually understand that horticulture is very different from the other sectors that they represent, and they can't all be lumped together with a shared strategy. We'll see what happens. We wait with anticipation.
Indeed we do. One of the news story that came up this week was Morrison's bought an ornamental nursery in Spalding called Lanson, and this is the first time I've heard of something like that happening. Do you think there's an interest there from big business in investing in British nurseries at the moment? Do you see money coming in now we're looking at Brexit?
That's unusual. I mean, there's certainly money going into British nurseries, not necessarily ornamental, but food production most certainly. That we see city money coming in, very much sort of chasing the sort of the carbon credits and the environmental good, the positioning glass houses next to waste heat, and whether it's from sewage output or power stations, that kind of thing. There is definitely money available for that. Very interesting move by Morrison's to have a sort of vertical integration like that to start to take control of a supplier. But if you look at it in the context of a long tradition of supermarkets owning farms, I suppose it's a logical extension of that.
So do you think, Richard, there'll be more nurseries getting investment from supermarkets, or is this a one-off, do you reckon?
I'd like to think there would be. I haven't heard any plans. I understand that some of the supermarkets are investing in their plant areas with an anticipation that they will see good sales in for next spring and summer. So it's been recognised as a core part of their businesses now, which is can only be a good thing. I think the having more competition in plant sales, I don't think we should be nervous of as an industry. I think it's the more people that are exposed to plants being available, the better. And there are, I imagine, many millions of people who regularly go to supermarkets who would very rarely go to a garden centre. So I don't think we should be nervous that it cannibalises existing sales. But I think it gives the garden centres an opportunity to up their game and add extra value, because, of course, they will have people there who can give advice and have experience on the plants and the planting required and all that kind of thing, where the supermarkets won't. So, you know, I think we will see more investment coming in. It's just interesting the supermarkets are making that move now.
Looking ahead, you've got new product development coming out this month, but obviously there's legislative changes around some of the products which you already sell. You're obviously big on crop protection and new ways of doing that. So what have you got that's new, and what have you got that's kind of under threat which you're having to change?
The products, the crop protection products, the sort of traditional chemistry ones, are always under threat. And the lists that come out of CRD each month are just huge. There's no imminent threat to a sort of key horticultural product at the moment. Obviously, everyone's aware of the threat hanging over glyphosate, which of course would be devastating for agriculture, but less of an impact for horticulture. We do have new products. We have a good pipeline. Our challenge is the time it takes to get these to market, and which can be, from the point of view we have a product ready to go, it can be at least 5 years before the product is actually marketable, and that's a problem. You know, sometimes you can lose a product and then not have a replacement for some time. We've just launched Tegro, which is a biofungicide. That was our launch, and that was in the last few weeks. So we try to keep things coming all the time. You know, we'll never sit on something for the optimum launch time, because growers do have a demand. They're waiting for things to come onto market. With other product areas, it's a constant evolution. The customer-driven move away from plastics is key. So we're seeing more use of sort of pulp paper trays, plant trays, rather than the plastic ones, and the shift to easily recyclable grower pots, which are the grey and the taupe-coloured ones rather than the black, is almost universal now. Not completely, but pretty much all growers are making that move. And where some of these products are more expensive, because the production cost is more expensive, there is just a gentle shift. It's not revolutionary, but the retailers are seeing those sort of eco-friendly and sustainable attributes as being a sellable attribute, a quality that they can pass on to the customer, to the consumer, and so they're able to pass those costs on. We're not talking about tremendous amounts, but it's a few pence here and there. Whereas a year or so ago, there really was a reluctance that there could be any increase in the cost to the consumer. All the cost had to be borne by the grower, which makes these things untenable. If the growers work on pretty tight margins anyway, and they can't afford to have additional costs simply because they're trying to do the right thing.
Thanks for that, Richard. Eloquently put as ever. But I just want to finish up by asking you, what are your main hopes and fears for the industry in 2021 after such a roller coaster year this year?
I think probably the first thing is the weather still. I think that can have a bigger impact than everything else. But there's nothing we can do about that, so we can't spend time worrying. We've still got Brexit to navigate, and we've still got to resolve the plant phytosanitary regulations, which are changing, becoming more onerous, not necessarily more effective, but certainly more onerous. And so these are all additional costs and risks to the business. And I guess because of whatever the outcome of the final negotiations on Brexit will be, the exchange rate has an impact, because it could make imports a lot more affordable. Even if a tariff were applied, they could still work out cheaper if the exchange rate goes too far the wrong way. And it can make some input costs grow faster than inflation would normally expect them to grow if the exchange rate is too extreme. So those are things I think we need to be prepared for, but there's only a certain amount we can do. They're largely out of our control.
And are there any areas where you think, you know, there will be areas of growth? We've mentioned the online sales, but what are your big hopes?
I think the growth, the opportunities, as we discussed earlier, is more people coming into caring about their gardens, and whether that's in a big way or small way, you know, it's all potential sales for the sector, and the stats that I'm seeing of how people are likely to continue shopping online next year, even with garden centres open and even with supermarkets scaling up their offerings, growers and retailers and companies like Fargrow, we need to be absolutely prepared to take advantage of online sales and make sure that we can deliver that efficiently. And companies have done a tremendous job on that. Some tripped over themselves because of the overwhelming demand, which you can't immediately scale up to. But I think people will be sort of positioned and poised, ready to take advantage. And on a much smaller scale, the small independent growers who did pretty well out of home deliveries over the spring and summer period, which we were very keen to support at Fargrow, just locally in West Sussex, with Facebook and other social media. I think they'll continue to do that. I think if they can do that in a controlled way, it will be a profitable part of their business and an additional revenue stream for them.
Well, that's a positive note for the future. Thanks very much, Fargrow's Richard Hopkins, who's been speaking to Matthew Appleby at the Horticulture Week podcast.
Thank you for downloading this Horticulture Week podcast. For more podcasts, the latest breaking news and industry-leading analysis, please visit horticultureweek.co.uk. This Horticulture Week podcast was produced and edited by Christina Taylor. For more podcasts, Horticulture Week news, analysis, exclusive industry reports, insight and data, go to horticultureweek.co.uk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.